You are listening to the Massive Report podcast.
Welcome to the Massive Report podcast, where we talk about Crew soccer games. And I'll be damned if we don't have a Crew soccer game to talk about. And almost a full house here tonight. Patrick Murphy, Ori Benatar, Alex Stanek, Bart Logan, and I'm Brian Phillips from CD1025. Thank you so much for tuning in. I know Alex is really excited to trash FC Cincinnati and their fans and everyone. Do we get that out of the way from the jump? Or do we wade in with our own team and then trash Cincinnati? I mean, do we have any preferences?
Alex, you make the call.
I think we just sprinkle in a little bit here and there throughout the whole show. I mean, you know, they've somehow gotten worse. They've somehow gotten worse. But let's talk about the Crew, and then we can talk about how absolutely god-awful our Southern friends are.
Well,
our friends from Kentucky.
When we start towards the end of this evening's festivities, when we start talking about the upcoming matches in our group, we're going to talk about how Cincinnati is the key to this whole thing. So roll that around in your heads, and we'll get to that here in a minute. Obviously, we have to talk about Lucas and that wonderful dead ball goal. And to me, when I judge a high-priced player and whether the money was worth it or not, in my mind, in my heart, when I see that, I go, that guy's worth the money. And you can tell that that wasn't just something that he could do one out of 100 times. That was with purpose, and it was put in exactly the right spot. And it's been a long time since I've been able to jump out of my chair and scare my wife and scare the dogs and scare the cats out of the room with excitement. That was a great goal, was it not? I mean, we didn't even have to really break it down, but just tell me how life-affirming that goal was.
Well, it's funny that you say that, you know, you talk about how much Lucas cost this team and you know, that type of moment being worth it, because Caleb Porter said after the game, you know, he said to the coaches on the bench, he's going to put this in. He'd seen it. He'd seen him do it 100 times on tape. He'd seen him do it in practice. You know, like you said, Brian, this is not something that was just a fluke. He knew exactly what he was doing. Lucas even said, you know, as he lined up for the free kick, he was picturing, you know, celebrating after scoring. So, something clearly intentional, something that, you know, I was just writing about the offense from this game, and there's been a lot of great free kicks in Crew history, and some are you know, cemented in MLS history. You think of Robert Varzija. Obviously, Guillermo had some. Pipa had some great ones. I'm sure I'm forgetting some other ones in there, but that one's got to be up there. And it's unfortunate that it wasn't in front of a crowd or, you know, something like that to really give it kind of that moment, you know, the eruption that you've described at your home happening in the stadium. But yeah, that was a thing of beauty. And I mean, his game in general, you know, you've seen it in the first two games. It's hard to remember that long ago, but this is a special player. And as much as we may touch on Pipa's appearance with DC today, as much as that kind of sucked for Crew fans, I think it was made a little bit easier because you saw what Zelarayan can do for that team. And I think you're getting your money's worth only in three games so far.
Well, Cincinnati did a great job of backing off at every opportunity, but I think that goal serves notice to the rest of MLS that you better be very careful where you decide to foul with purpose to stop an attack. Because if you put it in the wrong spot, if the referee points to the wrong spot for you, he's deadly from there. And a lot of guys can't do that. I mean, I've watched a ton of soccer the last several weeks. Premier League, Bundesliga, most of those go to waste. And you could see his talent for putting the ball exactly where he wanted it. And it was just absolutely a thing of beauty.
Hey, you don't have to look far to see those go to the waste, Brian, because FC Cincy put on a clinic on that later in the game.
Yeah, they did. We'll get to them. We're like a bunch of wild animals. We're just ready to be let out of the cage to attack FC Cincinnati. I almost feel guilty about it. They're so just putrid.
Don't feel guilty.
Okay, I won't. So it's easy to talk about Lucas's goal, and it's easy to talk about the night that Jossie Zardes had. The one that was assisted by Mokhtar was – that was a joke. Cincinnati didn't even defend that at all. And so I don't know how much we draw from his night, but Mokhtar's, as we wrote up on massivereport.com, not having Pedro on the field was a revelation for fans to see what else he could do. And in that particular setup, he was a nice fit, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think as Guillerme wrote in that article, Caleb likes to have one winger that's a true wide player and can stretch the defense in behind, similar to what Greg used to do with Ethan Finley. And then the other side, a guy who will tuck in almost like a Justin Merrim. And we've seen Pedro Santos do that in the past. Obviously last year he was playing more centrally a lot because of the injury to Higuain. But in that role, Mokhtar is very effective. And you saw the winger switch sides at times in this game. You saw him pop up in the middle and Lucas float around a little bit more. Even almost at times it looked like they were playing two forwards with Zelrayan pushed up as far as he was. And I believe on that goal, Lucas is kind of almost acting as a wide forward there just from the positioning. So, yeah, I think, you know, we saw some of this from Mokhtar last year in bits and pieces. But this is a guy who hadn't been on a team before he signed with the Crew. Didn't obviously get a preseason because he comes over in July. Has to get game fit, adjust to a new team, a new league, a new city. Now he's had a whole offseason, two games, and then plus some to kind of adjust to everything. And I think, you know, give credit to FC Cincinnati for being as bad as they were, but, you know, a player that can do some of those things can do them, you know, obviously Giassi's wide open, but you still have to make that pass. You still have to pop up in the right positions. You know, the finish on his goal was fantastic. So, you know, yes, we have to take some of this with a grain of salt because FC Cincinnati's defense may again be the worst in the league, but you know, some of the things you saw, like the free kick and like Mokhtar's performance, are things that you can certainly draw on even when teams are better.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the thing with this game. The million-dollar question at the end of this game is, are the Crew really good or FC Cincinnati just really, really bad? I think it's a mixture of both. I think the combination of Nagbe, Artur, and Zelrayan in that middle park with either Mokhtar, Diaz, Pedro Santos, or Etienne on those wide points, they're deadly. They can be deadly with a forward like Zardes, who is very aware of his positioning. They have the ability to attack very well. And offensively, that first game against Cincinnati, and I remember talking about this 4 months ago when we talked about the Sounders game, Crew didn't have a variety of different attacks, a variety of, you know, getting space and creating chances. Against Cincinnati, yes, the defense was god-awful, but we saw passes from the middle of the field. We saw them go out wide. We saw pings from near the byline. We saw Luis Diaz take 50 shots from all the different acute and obtuse angles that you could think of in a geometry class. But I loved the way the Crew attacked in this game. I think they had a lot of moments of brilliance. And we have to remember, this is after having not played for 4 months. And before the Crew Cincinnati game, this tournament was kind of barely pedaling in terms of entertaining games. Teams were slow. Goals were not being scored, and the most entertaining and best performance so far in this tournament has come from the Crew.
And I like that you brought up the fact that it's been 4 months, because I just, again, want to highlight the fact that FC Cincinnati fans waited four long months to see their team come back, only to get absolutely curb stomped by the Crew. And I don't think we should talk about this team as like, do they have the worst defense in the league? I think it's to the point where like, we need to be thinking, do they have the worst defense in the history of the league? Are they in the top five worst defenses in the history of the league? I mean, I think back to some of those like old Chivas USA teams and they were kind of a dumpster fire, but like I'm getting Chivas USA vibes from this team. And it's like, you know, you're going to pay $600 a seat in that gentrified stadium in West End in Cincinnati to watch this. Like there's still time to, you know, admit your mistake and come back and become a Crew fan again. You know, I know you guys were all old Crew fans anyway. We'll take you back. We know, you know, no questions asked, you know, water under the bridge, but come home. Only an hour and a half northeast, you know, not that bad. You know, come back to Columbus. Come back.
Well,
save yourself.
The thing that would give me great pains if I were a Cincinnati fan were just the basics. These are professional soccer players. They're paid to do this job. And nobody for the entire match bothered to close down a ball. And that's, you know, I've coached little kids and that takes a lot of patience. I imagine that, Yop is, his patience is being tried because this is the kind of crap that you shouldn't have to teach professionals. And they were so lazy. It's like, there's no excuse for that. And I just don't even know where to start with this team. There was nothing. There was one shot at the beginning by our former guy.
Well,
that was the highlight.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up real quick, Brian, is I think that if we're going to give credit to an FC Cincinnati player, it might as well be one who played for the Crew in Kakuta Mane. And I wonder just how different that game is if he's able to take advantage of that chance. You know, you put Cincinnati up, it would have been reminiscent to that game in Columbus, you know, last season when Cincinnati gets up, the momentum starts to get in their favor. Now, obviously, there's not a nervous crowd behind the Crew at that point. But you do start to think, okay, well, you know, we haven't played in a while. What are we going to do? And I'd like to believe that the Crew would stay calm and continue on as they did. But that could have been a game-changing moment. And I believe Eli Room came out and made the save there and denied Kakuta. But, you know, that was probably the last great effort Cincinnati had. They played okay for the first, you know, 15 minutes or so while the Crew kind of settled into the game. But once that free kick went in, I mean, it was over. You know, Giassi Zardes scores his first goal 3 minutes later. They go into halftime very confident. And I even said to somebody, I think on Twitter, you know, that was a good first half, but 2-0 is a lead that they say is the worst in soccer. And there were some moments for Cincinnati. Then they come out and score at the 49th minute. So 4 minutes in the second half. And, you know, when you've got a wounded animal like FC Cincinnati appears to be, you take advantage of it. And the Crew did just that. And then some.
I mean, well, how many times have we seen Giassi Zardes not take advantage in those opportunities? And even against FC Cincy, that first game, that draw last year. But he was just absolutely clinical. And I mean, that ball from Lucas to him on the third, too. And obviously, the free kick is going to get the accolades. But that ball was it was incredible. Arthur is, you know, was playing, you know, great ball, great long balls. This team was operating at a very high level, and it's definitely encouraging. I think, yeah, FC Cincy's god awful, terrible, just horrible. But that doesn't take away a good performance from Columbus in the midfield, from guys who are dealing with that 4 months off too.
Well, let's start in the back with Jonathan, who is 30 today. Happy birthday to Jonathan Mensah. TheCrew.com had this stat that I read today. Mensah completed 135 of 141 passes on Saturday night. And this is with Vermgaard going out of the match fairly early. And he couldn't have been bothered. And we see that he and Nagby and Artur – This has got to be one of the things that Caleb Porter is most excited about, is just that those three guys, he has to have them linked up. He has to have them in each other's heads and knowing where they're going to be. And that's where this team wants their center to be, right? You guys are more experts than I am. Tell me how important those three guys are to everything that we want to do.
I think they're essential. I mean, that's the one thing I think we can guarantee with the 2020 Columbus Crew team. They are going to pass almost perfectly. They had 91% pass accuracy against Cincinnati. After having not played a game in 4 months, they're not in game speed. And in the beginning there was a little bit of jitters. It took some time for them to sort of get into the groove, but Darlington Nagby is basically guaranteed 95% success rate every game. What am I saying? But Arthur also phenomenal with 90%. You mentioned Mensah with 95. Having those three, and then whether it's Keita or Vermgaard or even Schoberg, if he pops into this tournament in that Central Park, the center of the Crew pitch is basically these guys are in sync with each other. They're getting passes linked up with each other. And then out wide, when you have Afful and Jimenez, Mokhtar, Diaz, they were able to get the reception that they needed to get the space to make the runs on the wings. And, you know, there's a synergy there. And Caleb Porter's teams, especially this Crew team, they are going to be passing circles around teams across the league. I mean, 91% success rate for a game is very rare to see. You only see those kinds of numbers from Barcelona.
Although, go ahead, Alex.
I still just wonder how much of this is how abysmally awful FC Cincinnati are. I mean, I really want to see like what the numbers look like against New York to kind of get a feel for where this team is. You know, watching Cincinnati, I literally called my brother during the game, which I never do, and was like talking to him on the phone. And we were both just laughing hysterically at how, you know, you could have been, you should have played the Benny Hill music over the last, basically the entire game. It was so bad. I mean, I have gone to Open Cup games for as long as I can remember. And, you know, the Tampa Bay Rowdies in like 2012 would have passed circles around those guys. I mean, the Dayton Dutch Lions would have passed circles around those guys. I don't know what they're doing. And I don't think the players knew what they were doing. And as soon as that Lucas free kick went in, I think that every single one of those Cincinnati players knew it was game over. And you know, you could almost see their souls leave their body. Like they knew that, okay, here we go again. So I think that we had a very good performance, but I think we had a very good performance against a historically awful team. And so I don't want people to think that we're going to go on and, you know, trash every team that comes across, you know, in the table, but, it was certainly encouraging, and I was very happy with what we saw from the midfield.
Well, and I think one thing that you can kind of take solace with, even though it was a bad team that you were playing, is this wasn't the first choice lineup completely for the Crew. You know, Milton Valenzuela not in there, and Hector Jimenez put in a good performance, but obviously playing on that left-hand side, not left-footed, we know what Milton brings to this team. He wasn't in there to provide service. Yunus, we talked about, played very well, but we all saw what Pedro Santos is able to do over the last year plus. When he's in there, that's a different dynamic that you get. And we saw that kind of in the first two games. So those two guys you don't have. Then obviously, as Brian said, Vito Wormhoor goes out of the game pretty early. Now credit to Abubakar Keita, who I was actually surprised was the first guy off the bench with Josh Williams also available. But he comes in and he proved a lot last year, but a lot on a team that had no expectations and was playing poorly anyway. And that's a little bit easier to do. This is a team, you know, we've hit it a bunch of times. 4 months off, coming back, you want to perform well in your first game. He comes in and put in a pretty solid performance, especially coming off the bench. You're not really warmed up that early in the game. So I think, you know, yes, we have to temper expectations going forward. I think Alex is spot on with that. But, you know, once this team, especially if they can get, you know, past this tournament, get to a more normal regular season, if that ends up happening, where you're playing on a regular basis and whatnot, you're training regularly at your own facilities, you have your first choice lineup back in there, I'll be very interested to see what this looks like and how they figure out different guys and different lineups and things like that, because I do think they have a lot more options, and that was a big issue last year.
Absolutely. And you know, Keita is what, he's 20 now? Is he 21 yet?
Yeah, right about. I know he was 19 when he came in last year, so yeah, he's probably right about 2021.
I was glad to see him in that particular match because, you know, I'm a Westerville guy, so I like to see him play just as a fan. Obviously I want to see him do well, and I just thought he looked very confident. He had a 96% pass success rate, so he came in and knew what his job was. And I think, especially in that position, playing next to Jonathan is so important. Just know what you're supposed to do and do your job and don't get ahead of yourself or get outside of yourself. Just do your job and it's going to be cool. And he did that. That's maturity. That's the experience that he could gain last season that was so important. But when you have a season that doesn't go your way, that's what you want. You want to get guys into the match and get them, as young as he is, get that game experience. And this one went so bad, Alex, that we saw Sebastian Berhalter and a proud dad on the sideline as well. I'm sure it wasn't in the plans for him to play, but, you know, it gets to the point, as I mentioned on Twitter, it gets to the point where my high school coach would put me into matches like this. So I like the guys coming off the end of the bench when they're up 4-0, because I know that that's when I'm going to play. So any thoughts on the young guys that got minutes?
You know, I just think it's great that we were resting some of our key players for important matches. You know, for games like this at FC Cincy, I mean, it's good to let the kids run out there and, you know, kept the clean sheet. You know, we could have played the kids the whole time, and I think we still would have won that game. Honestly, going into this tournament, I thought, you know, I hate that we're having this tournament. I'm worried about people getting sick. I'm only going to watch the crew play. But now I might just watch every Cincinnati game as well, just to like see these beatdowns, because it's going to be entertaining. I mean, it's like professional wrestling when you see like one of those like 7-foot guys like run out of the stands. You know he's gonna like kick this other guy's ass, and you have like the other guy doesn't know it yet. FC Cincy fans still think their team is like okay. They think that they were just bad luck. Brush it off. Yap Stam's gonna get them playing in just a couple weeks here. No, he's not.
He's going to be gone in a couple weeks. He's going to be out. Like, he's going to leave. It's not. He's not going to get fired. He's going to be like, I'm out.
But their fans are talking about other coaches. I kid you not. I saw somebody say that they should bring in the coach from the Pittsburgh Riverhounds, and I was like, these guys are beyond help. They're beyond help. They're you cannot save them. It's just going to get worse and worse.
That's really delusional. I mean, he's a guy with a great resume. Maybe give him a chance and maybe go out. The front office needs to go out and build a team that he wants, and they're going to have to do the work. How he wants to play, you got to find the players. And that's true of any level.
They were just so bad, though.
With a bunch of guys that he can't use for the way he wants to play. I think he would just like guys to close down a ball at this point.
Yeah, well, and that's what surprised me so much was – yes, you're limited for sure, but, you know, they want to play, I imagine, that Dutch style, that possession and build up and whatnot. And clearly FC Cincinnati is not built for that personnel-wise right now. But they came out, they didn't pressure the crew back line at all. You know, we just talked about these passing numbers for two center backs. One of them is a 19, 20-year-old kid. As soon as he comes in the game, you think you just run Kakuta Mane at him every time he has the ball. But just the approach from the get-go was, let's try and kick the ball to Kakuta Mane and see if he can get in behind this defense. And there just didn't seem to be another option. And to me, you've had all this time to analyze these players. Now, you haven't had a ton of time to work with them, and I understand that. But it was just mind-blowing to me. And then you go down a goal, and there's no changes. And I saw somebody retweeted an FC Cincinnati fan saying that, you know, their coach just sat on the bench the whole second half. And wasn't even acting. I was like, well, what are you going to do? You know,
at least he didn't leave and go back to the bubble and like pound a 6-pack of Dutch beer. I mean, it could have been worse. He seemed pretty
positive. Could have just left the bubble and said, I'm re-quarantining myself for 2 weeks. I don't want to be in this bubble even. I'm done.
The best thing for me about this was they literally could have brought in that bald guy that they tweeted the picture of, and it wouldn't have been worse. Mm-hmm. Like, they could have just brought – they could have been like, oh, we're not going to hire Yap Stam. We're going to hire this Ajax youth coach that we accidentally posted the photo of. No difference. Zero difference. It still would have been 4-0. So it's like they're paying premium money for, you know, this product. And if I were an FC Cincy, like, season ticket holder, and I was getting those calls for that new stadium when they're saying, oh, yeah, it's going to be $1,000 to seat. You think I'm going to pay $1,000 to you know, be emotionally abused like they've been abused the last year and a half? No, absolutely not. I'll watch it from a bar where I can get drunk and then I can go home. And, you know, take an Uber, you know, get drunk, go home and cry yourself to sleep. You know, that's what they should do. Don't pay for those tickets. If you want to watch real soccer in a real stadium, Columbus Crew Stadium is opening summer 2021. You know, come on down. No hard feelings. We'll take you back.
Yeah, I mean, it was great, though, that against a team like Cincinnati, you were able to play the kids. Porter was able to bring in Berhalter, play in front of his dad. He was able to bring in Aiden Morris. And I think
that's going to be, I think they're going to get a lot more game time. I mean, we saw Caleb's reaction when I asked him about it, and he was really happy, and it was great to see, you know, an exciting smile from his face after, you know, all these hardships we've been through and having not played for very long. But it would be great to see Berhalter and Morris be able to play again. If the Crew are able to beat the Red Bulls and basically clinch a spot in the knockout stage, that Atlanta game essentially becomes almost meaningless. You're just basically going for placement. So we'll see if whether or not Caleb Porter's like, we need to rest for the round of 16. I don't care who our opponent is. Let's start Berhalter. Let's start Aiden Morris. Maybe we'll start Schoberg. Maybe give Lampson or Tarbell a game in goal. So I'd love to see more appearances from the younger guys and the reserves in this tournament. But I think in order for them to get more appearances, I think beating the Red Bulls on Thursday is going to be really important.
I think for future FC Cincy games, we need to call up at least one Crew junior for each game, just in case. Just in case we need to kind of, you know, level the playing field a little bit. We throw like an 8-year-old out there.
Or call one of us up.
Let me tell you what I'm thinking here, though. Because the goals in most of these matches have been harder to come by than they were for us, goal differential is key, especially for a team like Atlanta, who finds themselves on the wrong end of a 1-0 loss to Red Bulls. We have the goal differential lead. They have Cincinnati coming up on Thursday. They have every incentive in the world to run up the score on them. That's their best path to advancing. So really, in my mind, Cincinnati is the key to this whole thing, and how many goals can you score against them?
Yeah, and we see that scenario pop up, Brian, a lot in World Cup and Euro groups. One example I can think off the top of my head, 2002 World Cup, Germany was in a group with the Republic of Ireland, Cameroon, and Saudi Arabia. Germany beat Saudi Arabia 8-0. And it's like, we don't know how good they are necessarily. They're playing the worst team in the tournament, and Ireland and Cameroon go into the rest of those games, and it's like, okay, it's about goal difference. We know we can beat Saudi Arabia, but we need to be able to run up the score to finish in the top two. Luckily, in this tournament, a third-place spot gets you in. So with a +4 goal difference for Columbus, unless they get absolutely smacked around by the Red Bulls in Atlanta, which I don't think is very likely, Columbus should at the very least get a third-place spot, because those third-place teams in a 24-team tournament usually are going to have at least 4 to 3 points for the most part. 6 points gets you into the knockout stage. That's a given. 4 points is also like a guarantee. But if Atlanta, it's a must win for them on Thursday. They have to win 5 or 6-0 in order to have an opportunity of even getting out of the group stage. And then if Columbus beats the Red Bulls, then Atlanta and New York is basically in a position where whoever wins that last game. And the thing is that based on the scheduling with who plays Cincinnati when can maybe determine what the standings are. Columbus gets that early momentum, top of the group. New York gets to play Cincy last. Maybe a chance for them to easily get second place over Atlanta if they're able to maybe get a point against Columbus or a win and then smack around Cincy in the last game. So I think
You just delivered Jaap Stam's locker room speech on Thursday morning at about 8:30 or 8:15 or what. He's got a big, tall cup of Joe in his hands, and he's trying to fire his guys up. That's the speech right there.
Well, and one thing we should touch on, and Ori, you talked about it from the group stage perspective, but let's not forget that these games count towards the regular season. And if we're working under the assumption that there's going to be more games after this, and the optimisms in us, I think, are, you know, you want to win all three of these games. And so, you know, whether you qualify or not, you know, you beat the Red Bulls and you're through, I still think you probably see a decent, you know, given fitness and injuries, a decent group put out in the final game. And then maybe because the knockout stage, and Caleb Porter talked about this as kind of the knockout stage being an open cup, maybe depending on who you play in that first round of the knockout stage, assuming advancement, you then play some of the kids a little bit more or something like that. So I think the approach will be get as many points as you can here. Let's put ourselves in as good of a position as possible to get on with the regular season in an advantageous spot. And right now they're sitting atop the Eastern Conference. If you go and look at the MLS standings because of that goal differential, because that also counts towards the standings. So, you know, not only is this going to help them in terms of the MLS's back tournament, but if they do play now, they've got a 4-0 win under their belt. And, you know, still obviously that undefeated record.
So 10:30. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think another thing you got to keep in mind in that context, Pat, though, with the rest of the season is these playing conditions that they're playing in. You know, they're playing, going from playing at 9 a.m. to 10:30, you know, playing in this humidity and the heat. You saw what happened to Vito Wormhoor, and I'm kind of surprised we haven't seen more injuries like that. And I think, you know, if I'm Caleb Porter and if Crew can get the win in that second game, I just want to rest everybody and play all kids in that third game of this group stage, get them that experience, but try to protect your players if you're going to make a run at this tournament, and certainly guys that you want to have in the lineup for the remainder of the season, whatever it may be. I think that is an encouraging sign from Cada, though, that how well he performed, because he may, you know what you've got from Josh Williams, and you know it's always going to be, you know, solid, solid output. Axel Worm or Schoberg, we're still, you know, we don't really know, jury's out with it for him in a Crew uniform. So Cada, if you can know that you're going to get something from him and he can bring that game to another level, that's going to be really important if Wormhoor is going to miss any long-term time because of this injury.
Well, I know they haven't been forthcoming. They usually aren't about injuries until they have to be, but it didn't look good. And the early returns on Vito is he seems a bit injury prone. We remember the opener way back on March 1st, where he, if I remember right, he took a knock. And he turned that ankle over pretty good. So I don't expect that we're going to see him for the foreseeable future. And certainly those five subs, as we've seen in leagues that have been active around the world, even in England when it's pouring down rain and it's 55 degrees, they're usually going to use all those subs. And I think that that's the way forward when we're trying to get everybody fit, is to just use all those chips that you have. And if it makes sense, you know, get guys off the field and in those hot, humid conditions. I think that's going to be really key, how people manage their rosters going forth. Because you don't really know until you play several games in a fairly compact span of time, you know, who's fit, who's not. And to manage that time, I think, is going to be very key for all these clubs going forward.
Well, and you saw that on Saturday. You know, we talked about Pedro and Milton not playing. That wasn't any, you know, Caleb said they, because they didn't practice for a couple of days due to the positive COVID case, those guys, the whole team missed a few days of training. And these guys, because of that, picked up minor knocks. From my understanding, both should be available on Thursday. But, you know, I think you'll see some of that rotation, whether it's forced or not, where you do feel like you have depth. You know, you know you have Eunice, so you're not going to push Pedro in that first game. Same with Hector and Milton. So those positions where you are able to rotate, and they certainly have more depth than last year, I think you'll see it. I'll be interested. We talked about the central midfield and how good that was. Do they keep that group together as much as possible in order to keep building that chemistry? You know, those two have only played three games together, and while it's looked pretty good, do you keep that? You know, how much does Caleb Porter trust Fernando Adi? He wasn't on the bench this game, but when he does get there, you know, obviously there's the pass there, but what has he shown lately? You know, do you play Pedro Santos in that number 10 role to relieve Lucas Zelarayán a little bit? Because I can't imagine he plays every game, and I don't imagine every game is going to go well enough that you could take him off at the 60th minute or whatever it was. So there's definitely questions, and that's what you've got to do with these group tournament games and whatnot.
Well, this entire scenario is so unprecedented. So everybody, I think part of the success in this tournament, for those that have it, will be managing what it is and where it is, and you know, positive tests. I mean, guys are going to test positive. It's just going to happen. So there are a lot of moving parts here. We play New York on Thursday night at 10:30. They scored in the fourth minute, and then it was 1-0 over Atlanta. I didn't get a chance to see that match. Did any of you get a chance to take a look at that one? And if so, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I took a look at the game while also making sure to see if the Crew game was going to start at, you know, 1 a.m. or something with all the weather delays. But essentially, the summary of that match was New York just dominated Atlanta. Atlanta just looked flat throughout the entire game. They did not have many opportunities to score. At the very end there, they were kind of just trying to push up field, do whatever they could to get that equalizer.
Adam John coming off the
bench. Yeah, Adam John was playing. You know, Pity Martinez was trying to get as much into that game as well. But it was not a good performance from Atlanta United. And interestingly enough, the teams that were the favorites to win the group got off to some pretty slow starts. You know, a lot of people pinpointed Atlanta as a possible favorite to win Group B. They were the second worst team, obviously, since he was the worst, but they were pretty bad in their first game to New York Red Bulls. Seattle got off to a slow start in their first game against San Jose, and New York City obviously losing to Philadelphia in their opening game, which was the 9 a.m.er on the second day of the tournament. So overall, Atlanta was pretty poor. New York wasn't anything spectacular, but they looked very solid. Nobody had like a really disappointing performance. You know, Florian Vallot with the goal. Kyle Duncan played really well at the right back spot. Alejandro Romero getting the assist. And seeing Daniel Royer and Tom Barlow as the front two still in the post-BWP era for New York Red Bulls. I think for me, and I wrote this before the tournament started, this is the game of the group. This is going to determine whether or not Columbus finishes first or second, or New York finishes first or second, because you're in that rare scenario where the two teams that won their first game are playing in game two, and the two teams that lost their first game are also playing in game two, 3v3 and 0v0. So I think it's going to be a good match, but Columbus, even though they played a worse team, they looked better than the Red Bulls in their openers.
Yeah, and we talked last week about the Red Bulls in that, while they aren't the same team they've been in recent years when they were winning Supporters Shield just because the personnel's turned over quite a bit, they're going to play the same way. And you saw that if you watched the Atlanta game, especially early on. They're going to press. You heard Chris Armas at one point, and they talked about it on the broadcast. He said, whenever the ball goes to the number six, we go. And they go as a team, and they're very well disciplined in the way they play. And the Crew know that. It's nothing new. It's just different people operating that exact same system. So it's going to be very interesting to see how the Crew deal with that press, especially we talked about the Heat. We talked about the short rest. I think it's going to be essential that Darlington Nagbe is as good as he's been in these first three games. This is a guy who not only doesn't give the ball away when he's passing it, but he's probably one of, if not the hardest guys to take the ball off of when he has it at his feet. So he's got to be that level Darlington Nagbe, because they're going to attack that central midfield. They'll probably put pressure on the back line a lot, whether they, you know, whoever they indicate is the weak link. And the key is to not make mistakes. You saw if you go back and look at that goal that they scored early, it comes off a turnover a little inside Atlanta's half, and they know exactly how to hit on the counter, but they'll also try and turn you over near your own goal and create chances that way. So like I said, the Crew are familiar with how the Red Bulls play, but it's never easy. It's a weird system that you don't see all the time. And it's effective, and they do it as well as, you know, any team in the world on a similar level. So it's just about playing smart. Sometimes you're going to have to knock a ball long and just get out of pressure, and you just have to accept that fact. And that's something I remember Greg Berhalter learned after his first year going against them, was we're not going to play our system all the time against the Red Bulls. We're going to have to change it up. And that's what they're probably going to have to do. But they'll need to make sure they just don't make mistakes, because that's when the Red Bulls are going to kill you.
Well, it's a shame that the game starts at 10:30 on a work night, because I really feel like it's going to be a heavyweight bout. I in the Heat, it's going to be 90 minutes, and it's going to come down to a mistake here or there. I'm looking at a game that's 0-0 or 1-1 real late, and it's whoever can capitalize when minds are tired and legs are tired that are going to come up on top on this one. Let's go around the room, the virtual room here. Let's get some picks. Patrick?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think this is going to be a very tight game. You know, the team, as you said, Brian, team that makes the mistake could be in for a bad night in terms of results. To me, I think it'll very much depend on what the team's rollout lineup wise. You know, if they do start to adjust and make changes. You know, obviously New York played a tighter game, so the guys didn't get to come out. You know, you're still trying to hold on to that lead. So maybe a little bit of an advantage to Columbus there. But I think the Crew, there's no reason for me, from what we've seen, I guess, this year, that the Crew can't win this game. The Red Bulls opened the season with a 3-2 win against Cincinnati that didn't look very impressive, and then went to Salt Lake, and I think it was a late 1-1 tie that that Salt Lake scored. But, you know, 4 months ago, so take that for what it is. But I think the Crew probably get out of this one with either like a 1-0 or 2-1 victory.
All right.
I'm kind of with you guys on the draw perspective. I mean, I think this is one of the few MLS's back group games where any result is possible. It's really up in the air whether Columbus's attack is able to do what they did against Cincinnati, but against a better defense. If Nagby, Artur, Zelrayan, Mukhtar Diaz, whoever's starting in that game, along with Zardes at the top, if their offense has that variety that we saw against Cincy, and they're able to pass well and find space to create different chances against a better team in the Red Bulls, then I think it's fair to say that the Crew have one of the better midfield attack combinations in the entire league, if they are able to do what they did against Cincy against a better team like New York. I think it's going to end up being a 1-1 draw. I don't expect the floodgates to be open from the sense of goals, just because I think both of these teams are defensively pretty disciplined. Whether or not we see Keita or Williams at center back, if Vormgård doesn't play on Thursday, my guess is he probably won't, based on what we saw, you know, him having to limp off the field. He needed help to get off the pitch. And the Crew, though, are in a little bit more of a fortuitous position. They don't necessarily have to win the game to keep up that momentum for first place. They are in the position where even a tie keeps them in first, because if the Crew win, they're in first place automatically. If they tie, they're in first place automatically, because they're automatically going to have a better goal difference than New York. So I think Columbus will end up getting the draw against the Red Bulls 1-1. I'm expecting a defensively disciplined game from both teams, with a mistake here and there that will lead to the goals. And then for Columbus, it's going to be all about whether or not they can beat Atlanta to win Group E.
Bart?
I'm having a hard time with this, whether it's 2-1 or 3-1. And as the guy who correctly picked Crew to win for nothing against FC Cincy last week, I want you to understand that I take this responsibility seriously. I'm going to go with 2-1, though. I think we're going to see that midfield again, of Nagby, of Artur, who I know we've been talking and singing Nagby's praises, but Artur, I think, looked very strong in that game against FC Cincy, and I'm really hoping that this may be the year that he really takes that step. But I'm going to go with 2-1. I think that Nagby's going to get one here and going to show that, you know, that dangerous outside-the-box presence with his foot. And I think we'll see Keita back in the lineup at center back as well.
All right, Alex, quickly give me an Atlanta-Cincinnati prediction and then the Crew prediction.
Well, you know, I was just – it's funny you bring up Atlanta-Cincinnati.
Now you're not just
– I was just thinking about how, you know, they were going to wait 4 months to see their team play and then lose three straight games, go home. And there's – you know, if there's going to be a regular season, I think it's – personally, my prediction is that it's just going to go straight to the playoffs, and they're not going to get to see their team again this year. And so they're going to wait all that time to watch their team get trashed three times in a row, and then that's all the soccer they get. That's what they deserve, Brian. That's what they deserve. Well, I think it's going to be 3-0 Atlanta in that game, and I think it's going to be 2-0 for the Crew against New York. I'm with Bart on this one, but I'm going to move it over one goal. I think I don't think New York score. I think it's going to be a 2-0.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you, Alex. I'm seeing this 1-0 Crew. I think it's going to be just a it's going to be a boxing match. It's going to be hardly fought. It's going to be a hard fought match, and it's going to come down to a mistake, and the Crew will pounce on that mistake. Maybe it'll be another foul just outside the box that Lucas will bury. Now,
or it could be a mistake like taking a free kick and winding your own player instead of hitting it on
top. Oh, yes. I'm glad you brought that up.
And the highlight of that free kick.
As you said on Twitter, I believe it was you, Alex, that somebody needs to turn that into a meme immediately. So hopefully somebody has done that, because if you did not see it, Cincinnati and forgive me, I don't know, I don't remember the names, but one guy was clearing off of the line of players to give his man the space to shoot a goal, and he hit him right in the ass, right?
Well, yep. Yeah, well, they hit him in the side and knocked the wind out of him, and all I can say is GCG Bag, our good friends at GCG Bag, have made an incredible video based on this. You need to go to Twitter, at GCG Bag. It is unbelievable. It literally, you get through, I'm gonna give you a little spoiler, you get through three-fourths of it, and they cut in a little piece of audio towards the end there. It might be the last audio clip in the entire video. I was crying when I was watching it. I was laughing. So
well done.
It's a work of art. A work of art.
Well done.
Hang it in the museum downtown. Hang that. Get a TV. Play that on loop. Amazing. Incredible.
Well done, GCG Bag. That's. I would expect nothing less from you guys. And I think it's a TIFO, right?
We can.
When we have Hell is Real in the museum.
Right? Oh, that's very good.
Right?
That's very, very good.
It's the moment that he gets hit by the ball. And
I like it. I like it.
It's not like the Christian Pulisic, like 2-0. It's just him like running and getting nailed in the ass.
Really good. Yes. It's good.
It has to be. So let it be written. So let it be done. All right. Before we go, are we happy about Federico Higuain scoring today for DC United?
Yes.
Good for him.
He deserves it. I'm still mad that we didn't offer him a contract, but good for him.
I don't know how DC was able to get a draw out of that game. Two late goals against Toronto, while DC, I'm pretty sure, DC had 10 men for the whole second half and scored the 84th minute chip from Higuain and then brilliant in the 90th minute. So Toronto is definitely not going to be not happy at all about that result. But
I mean, yeah, that's it couldn't happen to a nicer team, though.
And, yeah, exactly. And,
they sort of, in my mind, replaced DC United as the team I hate the most since they came into the league. So I'm not unhappy about that. And obviously, to see Federico get some success, it's been a long offseason for him. And it certainly wasn't his choice. And I always look at that as a sports fan. What did you want to go or were you forced to go?
The weirdest thing for me about watching Higuain play for DC, and it was very strange to see him in a DC uniform, was he was wearing number 2. Like, they couldn't get a better number for him than number 2. He came on the field, and I had to double check the roster to make sure that was his actual number, and he didn't just have to throw on someone else's jersey or so. It was
because Edison.
Have they retired half their numbers or something? I'm sure that's.
I don't know. When he got to the crew, he was wearing his. He initially wore 33 for the crew. That's not available at DC.
Yeah, I don't know. How many kids does he have? Maybe that's what it's about.
Maybe, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I was glad to see it too. As long as he doesn't do it against us, it's all cool. Anything else, fellas?
Just from the stuff I've seen from the tournament, I thought Real Salt Lake looked good the other night. That's a team that could be interesting, under sort of a new head coach. Colorado looked completely disinterested with Kai Kamara and Lalas Abubakar, who had a big mistake that led to a penalty kick, but played well otherwise, which is pretty Lalas fashion. So that's one of the teams that I've liked thus far in the tournament. I'm hoping these games get better, though. Right now, they've just been on top of the normal sloppiness we've seen from teams. It's just maybe I've just been watching too much European soccer, and so my bar has been raised. But, I mean, there's been some exciting games, obviously. A lot of stoppage time goals, a lot of poor goalkeeping. Luis Robles looked bad. A few other of the veteran goalkeepers have looked bad. But, I just hope the standard increases as the tournament goes on and guys get in more shape. But, those are kind of my thoughts of seeing the tournament thus far.
I think the standards will get better for sure. But right now, the big theme we're seeing in this tournament is teams aren't able to finish out their results. Inter Miami weren't able to hold a 1-0 lead in the opener against Orlando. They stole a win. We saw, obviously, Toronto not able to hold a 2-0 lead against D.C., Montreal losing. But New England was – I mean, Gustavo Bou scored a great goal. And then also Sporting Kansas City. Minnesota scored 2 goals in the 90th minute to steal 3 points from SKC. And a lot of our Massive Report writers who predicted the full tournament, a lot of them had SKC going really far. I have SKC going to the final. A lot of them had at least semifinal, quarterfinal for them too. So, and that's something that our hope games are going to get better in MLS's back now that we're getting to the end of the European season. The Champions League will be coming back in August. But stamina and finishing out games is really important. So hopefully Columbus is not going to be one of those teams with a 1-0 lead in a game, and then in the 90-some minute, they draw or lose. I mean, we saw that today. Sorry to Pat. We saw that with Manchester United against
us. Oh, yeah. I was gonna bring that up, Pat.
Why? Why?
Because I had to. Won the league. That's why.
The guy that scored for Southampton was like 3 feet tall.
Yeah, I'm aware. I've seen the goal like 13 times.
Oh, you know, I have enjoyed watching those matches, though. It literally like saved my spirit just being able to watch Premier League and Bundesliga. And I know the MLS matches are going to get better, and I'm just glad they're on. I'm about ready to take on take in LAFC and Houston.
Should also be a distraction.
I'm going to crap about, but I'm going to watch it. So if there's nothing else, fellas, we'll reconvene on Monday and look back at the Red Bulls game and look ahead to Atlanta on Tuesday. Yes, Alex?
Yeah, one quick thing. I just wanted to call out that during the game, after the Crew had scored 2 goals, some FC Cincy fans got on Twitter and said that they were going to bed early. So I just appreciate the consistency that even when the game's at home, they still leave the stadium early. I really appreciated that. It'd
be funny if they stopped showing Cincy fans on the virtual Zoom boards during the game.
Yeah.
I should have done that.
I put on Twitter the old TV snow before we had digital TV where, you know, because I'm way older than you guys, so I remember the snow on the TV when the TV stations would go off the air. That was their screen at the match the other night. They all just turned around and walked away. Yeah, if you want a good cheap laugh at other people's expense, just go on the FC Cincinnati Twitter and read all their goal predictions. They were asked, who's going to score the first goal? And I just went to one of them, and I replied, bless your heart.
Yeah, the Crew actually trolled them pretty hard with that. With like a thinking emoji or whatever it was. They quoted the tweet after the game. So props to the Crew Twitter people.
Oh, well, yeah. And then they awarded the Heineken Man of the Match to the fans who stayed up as if.
Yeah, like the Time Person of the Year cover. Yeah. Like, look in the mirror, it's you.
It's 1 out of 11 fans, so it makes sense. The other 10 went to bed. So that, yeah, well done to FC Cincy. Just all around great. Great performance, 4-0. And you guys are going to have to go home and wait until 2021 to, you know, see a win. So it's going to be awesome. Go Crew.
All right. Well, we'll find out Thursday where we stand. I think we're in pretty good shape. Ori, Alex, Bart, Patrick, thank you so much. I'm Brian. We'll be back here next Monday, will we not? Patrick's in charge. So
that's the plan.
He tells us what to do. So we'll be back here on Zoom, and God willing, someday we'll all be gathered around a table again with some nice craft beer and discuss this in person. But until then, we'll do it virtually on Zoom. Thank you so much for listening to the Massive Report Podcast, and go Crew!